I'm Lindsay Claiborne.
And I'm Mumu Shu, and you are listening to Beyond the Microscope.
Hi everyone, welcome back to Beyond the Microscope. It's Lindsay and Mumu again. Today our guest is Dr. Anna Schneider. She is the co-founder and CTO of Watt Time, which is an energy tech nonprofit that fights climate change with software. Anna, thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here.
So let's start with the first question that we always ask. What is a co-founder and CTO of Watt Time? Tell us a little bit about your project and what you do.
Great, yeah. First of all, let's talk about what Watt Time is. So Watt Time is a startup that my friend Gavin McCormick and I started about 2.5 years ago. And the basic idea is thinking about when you flip a light switch, where does that energy come from? Sometimes it's going to be from different kinds of power sources. And we track those in real time and automate smart devices so that they can save carbon when cleaner energy might be available at a different time. And so as co-founder and CTO, I am in charge of making sure that the software gets written and the software gets maintained. So that's the CTO part of it. And as co-founder, I help get everything else up and running too.
So Anna, how did you get to this point? What got you here and why?
Yeah, so before this, I was doing my PhD at UC Berkeley. We're still Berkeley affiliated. And so even before my PhD, I was doing my undergrad at the University of Washington in biochemistry and math double major. And I was doing a lot of microbiology research, and I had a lot of friends pre-med. And I also had a lot of friends in math who were going to go get jobs at Google. And neither of those paths really resonated with me. And so I spent a lot of time thinking about what I wanted to do instead. And I ended up coming up with energy and environmental impact as something that I can do to really help the world, but not under sort of a medical framework or some other kind of framework like that. But then I was like, okay, well, I have a biochemistry degree. How am I going to make that happen? And so I went to UC Berkeley for grad school to work on photosynthesis in the biophysics program. So while I was there, we can get into the details of this more later if you're curious, but I was doing computational research on how the part of a plant that acts like a solar cell adapts to whether the plant is in high light or low light, so sun or shade. And then I was finishing that up in 2013 and looking for software jobs in energy startups. And at a hackathon that I went to as part of that, that's where I met Gavin.
And the rest is history.
And the rest is history. So that's a very quick overview of a lot of different parts of my life, and we can dive into each of those as you wish.
What is it about, you said bioethics? What did you say?
Biophysics.
Biophysics. What is biophysics? I feel like everybody combines like all these different types of different things, which is fascinating to me. What is biophysics versus something else? Would you explain to me what that means?
Yeah, that's a very good question. It comes up every time. I like to say that people can self-identify as a biophysicist. If you are someone who is interested in biological problems but likes to approach them using physical techniques. So some people will do computational work on different things in biology. Some people will use lasers to study protein folding. Some people will build fancy microscopes to look at super resolution structure of different kinds of biological materials. I had friends who built models of how seashells get their shapes and colors, all kinds of different things.
How is this different than bioengineering? Or maybe it's the same thing. I'm just trying to distinguish the two fields.
Mumu just wants to call herself a drone physicist.
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah, so there's a lot of overlap with bioengineering. At Berkeley, the biophysics program is actually an interdepartmental graduate group. So there would be people in the biophysics PhD program who would be working in bioengineering labs. but there would also be people in molecular and cellular biology labs. I was in a chemistry lab. There would be people in physics or math or all over the place. And so it's probably just a difference of philosophy that I tend to think of someone with engineering in their title is focused on building things or developing methods, and where someone with biophysics in their title might be more interested in sort of the theorizing or the data collection.
Is there a particular field of science that you like more than others, or you sort of like the interplay of all of them? It seems like what you do sort of involves everything.
Yeah, I definitely gravitate towards interdisciplinary topics no matter what I'm doing. Within those topics, I tend to develop a more nuanced interest in different things.
Depending on what you're looking at and what is interest. Yeah. Well, no, I mean, I don't blame you.
Yeah, of course. I know the feeling. That with anything they care about. But for instance, part of why I went from biochemistry to biophysics in my approach is in undergrad, I was working on a protein and making a lot of mutations to it and looking at how that changed the behavior of the enzyme. But it felt sort of scattershot to me. It felt very indirect. And then when we got the protein structure of that protein, I was like, whoa, I can see how these bits all fit together in a very visual and like really getting to the heart of the problem. And so structural approaches like that are part of what can characterize biophysical approaches as opposed to biochemical approaches.
Okay, so you were sort of interested in biophysics, biochemistry, all these things. How did that transition into energy?
Yeah, so like I was saying, I've been working in this microbiology lab, and a lot of it felt very indirect, and I wasn't passionate about sort of spending the rest of my life in that pursuit. And the more I thought about it, the more it felt like creating a world where people can live sustainable lives more broadly was something that I could resonate with more than helping the people in that world live healthy lives. So that was the sort of initial motivation. And then...
So how does working in a startup, you know, is it harder than you thought? Is it easier than you thought? Is it a whole different like mindset? What is it like?
It is both similar and different from doing a PhD. Yeah, and the similarities and the differences are not necessarily what I expected them to be. So one similarity is you have an idea and you have an empty space of 5 years in which to figure out how to make it happen.
That sounds traumatizing.
That's what a PhD is, too.
Oh, right. Well, that's why I didn't do that either. So, okay.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. So the fact that I had already gone through the sort of stress and anguish and building of self-reliance that was necessitated during my PhD to get from start to finish in that process has made it easier to do that again in startup land.
Can I just interject that a PhD is traumatizing? I probably maybe 3 months ago have just gotten over the pain of my PhD, and it's been however many. I graduated in 2013, so it's a legitimate thing. It's real. So okay, go ahead.
It's like a breakup. You have to take. It
is. Years it's.
To
I don't
recover.
Know what the. Really? Yeah. What is it? Half the time or something in years in
exactly.
months, right? Something like that. Okay. All right. Continue on.
Yeah. So Mumu, we probably finished at around the same time.
Yeah, I think so, and still trying to recover from it. So.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay. Congratulations on recovering there. That's a big deal.
You know, you didn't have a party to celebrate. I've recovered from my PhD. No, you didn't. You got one. No. I need 2 more years. Come back to me.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Back on track.
Yep. Yes. One thing that is different from academia, which has only become more and more salient to me the longer I am in startup land, is, and I'm curious if this is related to your experience at all, Mumu, as a new professor, but the idea of, so stepping back a bit, when I was thinking about what I wanted to do after grad school, I decided I didn't want to be a professor because it was kind of an impossible job. You have too many different kinds of conflicting responsibilities, and I wasn't seeing anyone in my environment really be good at all of them. And I had decided I didn't want to be a startup founder for exactly the same reason. You can't do a good job of all the managing and the fundraising and the coming up with ideas and the making sure that things happen. It's just a really hard job to do as one person. And then being a professor is even harder because you have to teach on top of it.
Yeah, no pressure.
Yeah. It's a joy every single day.
But a huge difference between being a startup founder and being a professor, from my vantage point at least, is that as in a startup, you can have co-founders. So I can be the CTO and Gavin can be the CEO, and we have different responsibilities, but we came in at the beginning and are doing this together as a team. And now we have other people on the team too. But from day one, there was the two of us.
Now that we sort of know how you got to the startup and to WattTime, can you tell us, a little bit more about what it is, what your idea was, and how you're going about doing it and what you're trying to accomplish?
Yeah. So my part of the motivation for why this idea resonated with me originally was I was interviewing at some other energy startups, and like one of the big things in energy software right now is helping utilities save money by helping them reduce energy usage at times when energy is more expensive. This idea is called demand response, and a lot of people who are trying to get people to sign up for demand response programs say that it's clean, it's using lower pollution energy because you're reducing energy use at the expensive times, and if expensive times are the same as dirty times, then you are reducing pollution, even if that energy use gets shifted to a different time.
What made you and Gavin decide to start WattTime? What was the motivation for it?
Gavin and I met at a hackathon in the spring of 2013, and he showed up at the hackathon, which happened to be on UC Berkeley campus. He was working on his PhD in agricultural and resource economics at the time. And during his research, he had been looking at where's the best place to put a windmill if you want to displace the dirtiest energy possible. So wind production is really intermittent and variable. So whenever the wind's blowing, you can produce energy, but at other times, you can't. And that's not something that is under people's control so much. So, and that also varies from place to place. So in one hill, you might get wind at some times a day, more typically, whereas on a different hill, you might get wind at other times a day. And so if you want to be managing a power grid in the way that uses all of the clean energy that's available, and as little of the dirty energy to supplement it, then thinking about the location and timing of different sources of energy makes a really big difference. So in his research, he was finding that both there's a lot of data on how this actually happens. So there's way more public data than I had any idea about what kinds of power sources are on the grid at different times, and even in real time. So at WattTime, we use power sources that, we use data sources that update every 5 minutes.
Is that fast or slow?
That is fast. Very fast. For, yeah. Like, if you think about...
just getting context, yeah, here, guys. I don't
so fast. Totally. Super fast.
I mean, it's fast from a personal perspective of thinking about, like, hey, if I wait 5 minutes, maybe there'll be a different source of energy available to me.
Okay. Yeah, that does sound... when you put it that way, it makes sense. That
exactly.
That is fast.
So where is all this public data that you're getting coming from, or what sources are they coming from?
Yeah, the balancing authorities are the ones that are in charge of making sure that the supply of energy, so what's coming out of those power plants, is exactly matched by the demand for energy. So whether you have your light switch on, and that has to be matched in real time a lot more frequently than every 5 minutes. It runs as often as every 4 seconds, actually. And yeah, so the balancing authorities are in charge of making sure that supply and demand are balanced. And part of how they do that is by running auctions for the power plants that put that power on the grid. And in order to run those auctions, they have to make a bunch of data public. And so we, the very first thing I did for WattTime was set up a whole bunch of web scrapers that would go out and scrape all that data as frequently as we could get it.
So then so WattTime takes this data and then does what with it?
So we take this data, and in more detail, the data is what's the total power demands for a given balancing authority, so a given region. So total power demand and also other things like the generation mix. So right now, how many megawatts of energy are coming from coal, how many from wind, how many from natural gas, et cetera. So we get a bunch of real-time data about the grid like that, and we run that through a statistical model that Gavin developed during his PhD and has extended a lot since then. That the idea there is to predict not what's everything that's on the grid, but exactly what's the carbon footprint of energy that you can save by using a little bit less energy right now, or use by using a little bit more energy now or later. So you're saying those are the marginal power plants, and we call that the marginal carbon emissions. And so that's really the amount of pollution that you can make a difference about right now.
I see. So like you're basically interpreting all this data and going, if you don't run your dishwasher now, but you wait an hour, you're actually going to have a much smaller carbon footprint than you would have had if you ran it now.
Precisely. And okay. So the very first thing we did with WattTime was send text messages that were exactly that. So we had the data, and the way that we delivered the data to you to make a difference was by sending a text message saying, hey, now is the cleanest time of day, run your dishwasher now. Or now is the dirtiest time of day, run your dishwasher in a couple hours.
Interesting.
Yep.
Well, so you said initially you sent them as text messages. Is it now like an app where you can sort of say this is a clean time or versus a, you know, in a couple of hours it might be a better time to run the dishwasher?
So now our focus is actually on sort of cutting the human action down to as little as possible, because people
smart.
Are kind of lazy. Yeah.
get the humans out of this.
Exactly. Like, I was getting these text messages and I wasn't even always responding to them. It's like behavior change is really hard. Mm-hmm. And so now the behavior that we want people to take is to, when they're choosing a smart device, so like a smart thermostat, for instance, or different kinds of things that you have in your home, we want you to buy a brand that is WattTime enabled, and I'm doing air quotes here. and then you can set up some preferences like, I really care about clean energy, or I like wind, but I don't like nuclear, different kinds of settings like that. And then you set all that up once, and forever after, our software will be running in the background, making small shifts in the operation of that device so that your home lives out your values for you.
Okay, so this is for a personal reason, because my parents are all into this stuff.
Cool.
Voucher me on this. They have an electric car, and they have the charger in there. They're in a condo building, and they have set themselves on, in California, I think it's Edison that they're on. And they use, you know, they're on this different plan that is like, super low rates if they charge and run things after 10 p.m. and they do all these things. Now, they may not have all these Internet of Things enabled, you know, Internet-enabled devices, but what can, if I was going to pitch this to them as something that they would love to use, which I know they would love to use anyway, what could they use it for? Like, how could they use it? Is it still something they could get text messages, or are you past that now?
So, actually, if they have an electric car, then our first product that someone can actually buy, like on Amazon and just go buy it, is an electric vehicle charger. So exactly for their kind of use case where you set it up in your garage and you plug it at 10 p.m. or whenever and you drive away in the morning. And during that time, our software will be running.
Okay. And then that would, like actually charge your car versus not charge the car based on the data that you were getting? Is that how that would
exactly.
work?
Exactly. So I see. The thing that they would have to configure is that they typically like to make sure that the car is ready at 7
charged by
in the
8 a.m. or whatever it is. Right.
Exactly.
So they would say, I need the car by 8 a.m. And then your software would say, okay, we'll make it happen.
Yes. And we'll make it happen by choosing, like, if it needs 4 hours of charge during the night and it's plugged in for 8 hours, then we'll choose the cleanest 4 hours to charge.
Is this available for across the country? So you'd be able to get data in every city or in specific locations?
We just a couple weeks ago launched our nationwide data. So we do now have data everywhere. And I am working this week actually on having the electric vehicle charger integrate all that data.
Cool.
So nationwide electric vehicle support is coming very soon.
So here's the sort of you looking at it from your data side. Is there anything about this data or what you're looking at that surprises you? Or is it sort of obvious, like when not everyone else is using it, when it's not 100 degrees outside, energy is cheaper? I mean, are there observations you've made that have surprised you or changed your opinions of things?
So one of the most surprising things, and this doesn't come out of our data per se, but it's one of the reasons why we care so much about making this project work, is so sometimes there will be a lot of wind energy available. Say a gust of wind comes by at a time when it wasn't predicted. And if there isn't a corresponding spike in the demand for that energy, then the only thing that the utility can do is call the wind farm and tell them to shut off. And that's just wasting zero carbon free energy. If only all the dishwashers and EVs knew to turn on right at that moment, then that energy could be used. And getting that kind of technology integrated really widely and easily in the power system is going to be essential for getting us up to the 50% or 80% or 100% renewables targets that a lot of people want to get to.
That's interesting. So, like, if only everybody knew, we wouldn't lose all this energy that we are even getting now that we sort of can't do anything with.
Exactly.
That's really interesting. All right, now here's a telling question for you, and if it's a bad answer, I can cut it. how good are you at being energy efficient?
I definitely try.
that's better than most people.
Yeah, so one thing is that it can be hard to tell from a moment-to-moment basis, like exactly what you're doing. One thing that I am not at all proud of is I live in an apartment with a few friends, and we've lived here for 5 years, and the fridge is from 1978, as far as we've been able to tell. And so if we had put our foot down with the landlord as soon as we moved in, it was like, dude, get us a new fridge. We would have been paying probably half the electricity bill for the last 5 years. Wow. And
I mean, they've made gigantic strides in 30 years. I mean, that's not like 2005 to 2015. I mean,
no, it is just tragic. I really want it to die, but it hasn't died yet. So that is one area in which I am not proud of my efficiency. But I don't own a car. I walk or bike or take transit most places. So in other ways, I'm doing better.
Do you think, I'm trying to think of the best way to say this. What's the next big thing that's coming out when it comes to renewables that you either haven't seen yet or we don't, what's the, either the next product or the next big hole looking for a product that we're, is going to be in the news in 5 years that you've sort of run into or seen, if you can foretell the future?
So for renewables, the interesting thing there is that the technology is pretty much there. It's just a matter of deploying it now. like solar panels are good and they're getting really cheap. Like they have gotten really cheap. Wind turbines are good and they have gotten really cheap. So in most parts of the country, renewables are cheaper than, like, if you're going to build new power sources, building new renewables is cheaper than building new fossil fuel plants, which is fantastic. It's really great that we have gotten to that point.
But once the finance works in your favor, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So one consequence of that is that we don't necessarily need new products that way. We just need to have the business models and the sort of financial incentives lined up to get them out the door and get them on people's roofs.
Climate change. That's, you know, it's the hot button topic. Is it, how is that affecting what you do, or does it affect what you do, or is it just sort of another thing to throw into the hopper?
So climate change is our motivation for doing this. Like I said, Watt Time is a nonprofit, and we are a nonprofit with a very strong environmental mission. So our mission is to reduce power or reduce pollution from the power grid by using all of these methods that I've talked about. If climate change were not a problem, then we would not be doing this project. But a lot of the day-to-day stuff in the climate activism movement, so things like Keystone XL and the Paris talks, are things that we're sort of personally passionate about, but it doesn't affect the progress of our work so much because I actually see a fair bit of a split in the people who are working on the climate problem and people who are working on climate solutions. And I'm personally much more in the climate solutions camp, which is not to say that people who are focused on publicizing and exploring the details and the ramifications of the climate problem are not doing extremely important work also.
Well, there's just it's just so many different things.
Yep.
And I mean, it's like we could all agree on a solution, but then to be able to implement and actually get it to work is a whole separate animal in its own way.
Yeah. Yeah. But having people understand that climate is a problem is a prerequisite.
It's the first battle. Yes, let's start with a simple battle.
Big battle. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
We have a climate. It is changing.
But it's it's cold. I don't understand.
Snowball. Come on, guys.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, and I think that is, I'm like excited. Like I want to play with. Is it an app that I can play with, or is it something that I have to have the right tools to use?
Because so, unfortunately, it's only available if you have a Watt Time enabled smart device right now.
Okay.
But right. If what you want to do is play with the data, then if you're someone who wants to write a couple lines of code and play with data, we have all that ready for you.
Oh, even better. How much of a nerd I want to be.
Is it just on your website?
Yep. So the website is watttime.org, Watt Time with 3 T's. And the electric vehicle charging station that I mentioned earlier, that's in partnership with eMotorWorks, which is another company in the Bay Area here. So that's the Juice Box Green. So that's something that – try not now, to make this a sales pitch, really.
Here's my EV question about that. What kind of adapter are you going to have for your charging box? Are you going to be Tesla friendly, or are you going to be like the generic that like Nissan uses? What are you doing with that one?
It works with both.
Ah, there you go. Good answer.
Yeah. And like as Watt Time, we don't make the hardware at all. That's our partner's problem.
You just provide the information.
Exactly. Like I am many things, but a hardware engineer is not one of them.
All right, so when are you going to get your when are you going to get your electrically charged drones on Watt Time?
Oh, awesome. Yeah, no. They run on batteries.
Yeah, but you have to charge your battery somehow.
Yeah, that's a separate issue.
Yeah. No, this definitely isn't the fit for a lot of kinds of energy use. Like, I always use the example of flipping a light switch, but no one really wants their lights to go out whenever
just their like, energy sorry, is dirty. Sorry, it's the wrong time. You can't see right now.
Exactly.
You had your hour. That was all you got. Well, yeah. But you're thinking like bigger scale, right? You have your car charger. Maybe you have it on your appliances, or maybe you have it on your like port for your like connection to the grid in general. I mean, that's sort of what you're thinking, right?
Yeah. So things like home appliances. And then I didn't even get into talking about commercial buildings. So
my gosh. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Please do.
Data centers, the air conditioning for that can run on something like this. The heating and air conditioning for office buildings in general.
Oh my God, my building needs that.
Yeah, and like chillers and
like restaurants.
And yeah, yeah. So refrigeration. Grocery stores and stuff. Yeah, so like walk-in coolers, all of this kind of stuff is theoretically Wattime compatible. And so that's been one of our big challenges is deciding which of these to target first and then building relationships with companies.
In your data analysis of these things, are there certain things that are less efficient? Like are people, okay, they come home from work and then maybe they do their laundry, so it's probably later at night anyway? Is it they're bigger culprits or bigger abusive users, corporations, or is it people? Kind of like the water issue we have here. I mean, it's, you know, they talk about homeowners and there's a few homeowners that are bad actors, but most of the time it's like state governments or commercial buildings that water their lawn all day.
So we don't think of it like abuse that way or like bad actors. Partly because like if people are wasting energy, if people are using electricity that they shouldn't be, then they should take efficiency steps first. Like, and we, this is, yeah, sort of independent from efficiency. So, and you can do them in either order, but they're important and they're different. And so this is, if you're going to use energy at some point, when's the best time to use it? And so this doesn't necessarily save you money on your energy bill, but it will save you carbon without saving you money and without costing you money either.
Well, but if power companies start adjusting their rates accordingly, right, to the energy that's more efficient or costs less to them, then in theory it would save you money or save someone money, right? I mean, there could trickle down, but what you do specifically doesn't actually relate to that.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And so for people who are on time of use rates, like if it's cheaper at night, then right, we will take that into account.
I see. So you'd be like, well, it's cheaper for this, but...
Yeah, and so for something like a thermostat, you would want to have three dials, like how much do you care about cost, how much do you care about comfort, and how much do you care about carbon? And then we can run that optimization.
It's going to be a lot of arguments between family members about how much comfort they want versus price.
Exactly.
Yeah, but you'd have another arguing factor. You know, if your previous argument was like, it's too hot, no, it's too cold. Then your argument can be, it's too hot, but it's cheaper this
I'm just
way.
Imagining all or my couple friends who one person is an engineer and one person is not arguing, and now they have numbers to prove it. So it's just...
But it's better to be colder because it saves us money.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You have no idea the trouble.
Not a trouble.
Yep.
All right, Anna, this has been a really fun conversation. Thank you for taking the time to talk to us and share with what you're doing.
Oh, my pleasure. This is really fun.
Like our show? Find us on iTunes or at scopepodcast.com and follow us online on Facebook and Twitter at Scope Podcast. This is Mumu Shu
and Lindsay Claiborne.
Our theme music was composed by The Copycats. Thanks for listening.